Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Views on View. I'm your host, Lindsay Wardell. With me today is Steve Edwards.
Hello from a sunny and cool Portland. Still no rain.
Still no rain. And special guest today is Mike Gallagher. Welcome, Mike.
Thanks, guys. It's great to be here.
Yeah, great to have you here. Would you mind introducing yourself for our audience?
Yeah, so I suppose I'm here because I write a lot of articles on Medium around tech. I'm really focused on Vue and in recent times on Nuxt. So I should be able to walk you through some nice stuff I've written on Nuxt.
Excellent.
I remember working my tail off to become a senior developer. I read every book I could get my hands on. I went to any conference I could and watched the videos about the things that I thought I needed to learn. And eventually, I got that senior developer job. And then I realized that the rest of my career looked just like where I was now. I mean, where was the rush I got from learning? What was I supposed to do to keep growing? And then I found it. I got the chance to mentor some developers. I started a podcast and helped many more developers. I did screencasts and helped even more developers. I kind of became a dev hero. And now I want to help you become one too. And if you're looking forward to something more than doing the same thing at a different job 3 years from now, then join the Dev Heroes Accelerator. I'll walk you through the process of building and growing a following and finding people that you can uniquely help as you build the next stage of your career. You can learn more at devheroesaccelerator.com.
And for those at home listening, we do have an article on Medium to talk about. There will be a link in the show notes to it. It's a very good article if you're interested in a deep dive into Nuxt. But Mike, before we get there, would you mind just talking a little bit about how you got into programming?
Yeah, sure. I suppose everyone starts off with a story. They're a kid, you know, they're playing around with things. Yeah, when I was a kid, there was a young scientist competition that was pretty common. Schools would enter and stuff like that. And I remember I entered with a friend a few times with some programs, really basic stuff. In fact, it was actually basic stuff. So yeah, that's where I kicked off, I suppose. Went from there.
So what kind of languages did you start out with? Like back end, front end, sides, or bottom?
Well, yeah, good question. Yeah, I mean, I actually started with Java. Java was actually my staple for a long time.
Condolences.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sorry.
I'm glad somebody else said it, you know, because I've been telling people for a long time that I jumped ship. I said, I'm tired of this. I said, JavaScript is just so much more fun. But everyone I talked to, they sort of say, oh, you left, you know, people do stick with Java. But anyway, I'm really happy now. I jumped ship and moved over to JavaScript. So,
well, recruiters think that I have a Java background because I get job offers all the time for Java developers, even though my profile only says JavaScript. I think their bots just see Java. Oh, he must be a Java developer.
They need more Java in their Java bots.
Yeah. Too much coffee in them.
Too much coffee. What specifically interested you in JavaScript, Mike? Was it just wanting to work in the browser more? What led you there?
Well, actually, I do a bit of Node stuff as well. To be honest, I'm sick of strict typing. I know that's, and in actual fact, I use a bit of TypeScript here and there. I don't use a lot of it, but I loved, what is it they say, that the sort of first class, you should know the term now, it's on my head. The fact that you can pass functions around and you don't have that, not recently in Java. Java is trying to modernize, but it's really struggling to modernize. JavaScript just always seemed easy.
Yeah, I was going to say, you must not be a big TypeScript user.
No. I mean, I use it a bit, but I suppose I use it in particular places. You know, I suppose a lot of loosely typed languages let you be flexible when you want to be. And then when it's of value to sort of type something up, you can do it. So I think that's good.
So not to go down a rabbit hole then, I mean, you know, if you talk to people that come from loosely typed languages, the whole benefit to using something like TypeScript is that it does make you type things and that it helps you avoid compile errors and stuff later down the road because, for instance, you're not passing in a string where an array is required or something like that. So you think that it's possible to be too tightly typed?
Well, I suppose I love having a type as an interface to sort of give to another developer, right? So you can say, this is what we're working to. And I think that's the time it's most useful. I don't know if it's as necessary to sort of catch some of the smaller type errors that you come across. I definitely like interfaces, but you know, when they're useful, when there's cross services and things like that.
Yeah, I have a passion, let's say, for typing and strongly type in the front end. My favorite programming language is Elm. So I go all in on the types. But I also see the value of having a dynamic language where you can just write code and it just works and you don't have to think about it too much. So I can understand that. That's one of the things I really feel is something that Vue solves because there is some typing, like with props, you can type them. And there is some basic type checking, even if you're not using TypeScript in the rest of your application. But you don't have to follow it. It's more of a recommendation. Does that sound accurate?
Yeah. I think it is good. Yeah. I mean, it's structured.
Yeah. Even though it's dynamic, there's still a structure there. And Mike, what specifically brought you into Vue of all of the front-end frameworks that were available to you?
Well, at the time I was working at Backbone, and we did a couple of POCs, and I remember we evaluated React, but Vue just seemed like such a natural progression from Backbone and what we were familiar with. And at the time, actually, the first open source project I put together was actually one called Vue Backbone, which is it's a library to interface between Backbone and Vue to allow Vue to render Backbone models and collections. It's a bit dated now. I still get people talking to me once in a while about it. You know, they still use it. It was, I suppose, my background is in migrating over to Vue. I've done a lot of projects migrating to Vue. And, you know, that first one was from Backbone. And at the time, I put together this library that would sort of reactify your Backbone models and collections. It's pretty simple, but it worked really well. And it's a nice stepping stone across to Vue. You know, I do a lot of work with large code bases that have been around for a long time. And when you're migrating them over to Vue, it takes a lot of different steps. You know, it's back to that incremental adoption, I suppose, as well, you know, that Vue talks about.
Yeah, that's one of the things I haven't really personally experienced as much, that incremental adoption of Vue or that progressive enhancement like they describe on the homepage. Typically, when I'm working on an application, if I want to use Vue, I tend to start from scratch on the front end. I had a PHP prototype, for example, and rather than implementing Vue components here or there, I just replaced the entire front end with Vue. Took a month or two to get up to the same point where things were working. But then I was able to just cut over. We're using Vue now, and none of our clients noticed, rather than that incremental approach. So I'm very curious to hear your experience with that, since that seems to be something you have done more frequently than I have.
Yeah, well, I mean, incremental adoption, I suppose, I mean, two ways. One would be that, you know, you can sort of dive into tech as deep as you want to go. So you could start off with some of the simpler concepts and grow your knowledge and start using more complicated constructs in Vue. But the other side of it, yeah, where, I mean, I've done a lot of projects where you take pieces and you sort of migrate things one at a time. I mean, the first project I started with, or no, it was the first, maybe the second, didn't even have sort of ES6 and you didn't have Webpack. You know, you come into these older projects that you have to move across. It's a very big undertaking. So Vue does allow you, I mean, you have to come up sometimes with unorthodox solutions as you're sort of stepping over to something new. But I've always found it fascinating. And truthfully, when I go looking for new projects, those are always the ones that sort of call out to me. Being able to sort of gradually bring that in. And I suppose that might have been the stepping stone to me always looking under the hood as much as I can. You know, I mean, this article that we're talking about today, it's about looking under the hood, peeling back the layers of the onion. And so I suppose when you have to come up with those sort of hybrid solutions, you got to know how all the nuts and bolts work.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I'll just borrow that segue and we can dive into the article. So what you were writing about was how Nuxt works from top to bottom, some of the different problems you ran into and solutions. Would you mind just explaining briefly what the article was covering and what problem you were trying to tackle?
Yes. So it's a problem I came across a few times and a few people have asked it. And, you know, in hindsight, having gone the journey I went, it sort of seemed fairly obvious now. But when I started off, you know, you're sort of getting to grips with the server side, client side sort of divide, and you find yourself asking that question. I mean, the problem I was trying to solve, right, was I had authenticated pages in my application, which the authentication mechanism had to be handled client side. It's a sort of single sign-on kind of process whereby on the server side, I couldn't know if someone's authenticated or not, right? So it's, like I said, I've seen people with the exact same problem talking about this, right? And the question that comes up, you know, you're talking about middleware, right? So middleware is one of the pieces of Nuxt, but middleware isn't new. Router guards exist on the client side. And, you know, generally speaking, if you're writing something that requires authentication, you know, you move over to a new route and a guard kicks in and says, hey, this guy needs to be authenticated, send them off to the login page. You know, pretty simple stuff. Or it could be off to a single sign-on process that, you know, sort of brings you back in a single flow, transparently, that kind of stuff. The authentication mechanism I'm dealing with JWTs. So there's a lot of information embedded in JWT and stuff like that. And, you know, you got that most of the processes these days have the refresh tokens and all that. But not to go way off track. So you're in Nuxt and you hit a page for the first time, right? It does the server-side render, okay? So we can have middleware in Nuxt, which runs either server-side or client-side, right? So if you hit the page for the first time, it runs on the server-side. But if you navigate over on the client-side, that's where it runs there, okay? So if you think about it, it's a navigational guard, right? So the common question is, hey, can I force it to run client-side? And I actually saw some responses and forums where people were like, no, obviously not, you know, as if it was obvious, but it's not obvious. And when you're getting to grips with that sort of server client-side divide, you have this tool, this middleware piece, you know, this module in your project. And so there's lots of stuff in Nuxt that very clearly runs explicitly server-side and client-side, like plugins. You can choose in which space they run in. And there's lots of places at Nuxt where you can pick and choose that stuff. So that question, can I run this middleware on the client side? It's a catch-22 situation. And it isn't necessarily apparent at first, but when you start to get to grips with all the cogs and how it all works, it makes perfectly good sense that you couldn't run it just client side. So that's the problem, right? So you come along, you hit a page, it requires authentication, and you want to wait for the client side in order to, and not just to, it could be the case that you just need to refresh a token. You know, it could be the case that the user doesn't need to be interrupted, or we don't know for sure that they're unauthenticated. You know, we need to wait till they get to client side so they can do the single sign-on sort of procedure with some third party. So one person actually responded to the article and they said, you know, could you just wrap everything in a client only? Nuxt allows you to force things to render on the client side, but what about the 9 times out of 10 people are browsing around and they have a session and we know it's all good and we can render it all on the server side? So this is where we're sort of diving into that realm of rendering clients at a server side. It's not as black and white as client only. And I suppose that's where the whole article came from. And the solution I came up with in the end was after trying a number of different things, and it took me on a bit of a journey going through all the different pieces of Nuxt. So I wrote the article talking about all the things I'd sort of checked and looked at.
So before we get too far down the road into the particular solution that you came up with for your problem, I'd like to sort of step back and maybe have you walk us through the build process when you call the next page, if you're using server-side rendering. So just for clarification, Nuxt can also be used to create a statically generated site where you run a build process and it generates your static HTML and you deploy that to Netlify or Amazon or wherever you want to. The pages are already pre-built. As compared to running two parts where you have a server-side code and then you have client-side code as well. And I think if there's anybody like me, that's probably far and away the most confusing aspect of how those two pieces play together. And so the image that you have at the top of your blog post is sort of interesting, that it uses a picture of the earth, a cutaway of the earth, showing the core and then the different layers building out to the top side. So do you think you could walk through like the beginning of the build process that you said you studied and how it all works, and how in particular interest to me is how the server-side rendered code is passed to the templates on the front end, whether it's part of async data or what other mechanism. Because if I understand correctly, you can have rendered data passed to a template and then just tweak it from there versus just filling in your template from code on the front side itself.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, yeah, you're right. Obviously, this statically generated, there's a few different modes that Nuxt runs in. Obviously, Nuxt itself is more than just the server-side rendering part. You know, it's a framework with a lot of different sort of conventional over configuration pieces to it, right? So it does a good job of hiding you from the details, that has to be said. One of the things I always say to people is that there's a fantastic Nuxt lifecycle diagram in the docs. I think it was Kruti Patel that put it together. And it's fantastic for giving you that overview, you know, of those pieces. So I run Nuxt in universal mode, right? Which means that it has a server-side process. And each time you make a request to the server for the first time, you know, you're starting a session, you know, you hit the landing page, let's say, it's going to server-side render that, send you back the HTML and the application state. And it does that client-side hydration. So what you're doing is you're looking at the rendered HTML while Vue is kicking into action, you know, while it's sort of bootstrapping itself. So, I mean, and the benefit of this, I work for an e-commerce company called Hip. And by the way, we're hiring, so reach out to me on LinkedIn and we can talk. Yes, so it's an e-commerce company, right? And one of the things that's very important is SEO and also obviously speed. You know, when people are browsing around, they tend to open a lot of new windows when they're sort of browsing for products. So the server-side rendering aspect is a no-brainer for us. And what happens is if you hit the landing page, it'll do the render on the server-side process. And it's all obviously it's server-side rendering, so it's isomorphic code. And the isomorphic code is part of the interesting part of the Nuxt and all the server-side rendering movement. So it renders on the server, produces that HTML output, sends it back, and then the application picks up the client side. And as you navigate away, you're in a single-page application. You know, there's no more server-side rendering. It's always on the first access. So yeah, I mean, that there's a complicated life cycle there. And as I mentioned earlier on, that great diagram that's in the Nuxt docs, it puts it at a very high level. There's a sort of a transfer from server across to client, but inside there's lots of moving pieces and some pieces run on both environments and some pieces only run once and only at a certain moment. And even in the article, I mentioned sort of asynchronous and synchronous stuff. So yeah, it's not, I mean, you start off and it, you know, the basic concept is simple, but as you start to get into the nuts and bolts, it does get a little more complicated. So will I go down through some of the components I'm talking about?
One quick clarification question. You talked about the point where it's handed off from the server side to the client side. So can you describe where that happens or how that happens in particular from the client side? Can you see like the actual HTML that's been rendered from the server side and tweak it or not? How does that all happen?
You could do, yeah. In this situation here, there's nothing sort of, I mean, I'm not too sure what you mean by tweaked, but in this particular case, it comes back to the client and we have the serialized state. You know, there's a Nuxt state that comes back, which is what's used to kick off the Vue X store. And actually the Vue X store is kind of a pivotal piece of the solution in the end of the day, because, you know, it's serialized or snapshotted and brought back to the client, you know, and the client then loads up and continues, you know, and then even inside the components you have the mounted is a lifecycle event in Vue that we're all familiar with, but in the Nuxt world that only happens on the client side. And then, and natural fact that, I mean, there's other hooks inside Nuxt that Vue devs wouldn't know, like the async fetch. Async data would be, you know, if you want to go out and, let's say, make an Ajax request to an API to pull back the data your component needs, your page needs, that can happen on the server side or client side. And that async data hook, it's actually something that happens as you navigate. So it's
doesn't
really
it happen both server side? If I remember, there's some sort of context object that you could look at that inside of the async data to determine whether it was happening client side versus server side.
You can indeed, yeah. You can definitely put in that logic. It's Nuxt gives you a lot of behavior that you don't need to go digging in the weeds. You know, you don't need to make that distinction. And you know, my experience is a lot of devs get into Nuxt and they can work away oblivious to some of these powerful sort of features you have and control you can take. So you could definitely make a call on doing something different server side and client side in that fetch, you know, in that async data event.
Yeah, my problem is that I'm one of those people that wants to know the details. So therefore I go digging.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely the same myself. You know, I'm always causing trouble under the hood.
So looking at this image on your post that shows the different stages. So you've got server side rendering and then we get into your hooks. So yeah, I know speaking strictly from a view standpoint, I know mounted and, oh my gosh, I can't remember the other one. What's the other one that's right after mounted?
There's created, mounted.
Created, thank you.
Before update.
Right. I think created and mounted are a lot of ones that are commonly used. to do something that you need to do right at the beginning of the mounting process to create some data for your component or add something, insert something in there or tweak something or do whatever. So are those hooks different in a Nuxt and where they're implemented in the process different in Nuxt versus just straight Vue?
Yeah, I mean, the hooks that I was talking about here are actually sort of hooks that you'd often use in modules. It's actually, it's hooks is one of those words that gets too many uses.
You know, yes.
I thought you were going to go talking about the sort of hooks in the context of Vue 3 as well as a whole other area. But in this case, Nuxt, generally speaking,
lifecycle hooks. Let's clarify and say lifecycle hooks.
I mean, in Nuxt, when you're building modules, I mean, the scope of what you can do in modules is phenomenal. You can really tap into it and you can add in those build hooks, Nuxt hooks. I saw that the Nuxt Nation conference is coming up soon, and I saw there's a session on doing the modules in Nuxt. You know, and there's so much power you have there in the build process generating code. So yeah, those hooks I'm talking about there would be inside the build process. And in actual fact, on my journey going through this particular problem, the hooks didn't really give me anything that I couldn't do with something else. I've written a few modules in Nuxt and done a bit of work on it and sort of, I suppose, toyed with it as much as anything else. I don't have so many sort of production, you know, use cases for it, but I've definitely done a good bit of toying with it. But my main focus ended up on Nuxt middleware itself, right, which is this sort of magic component which runs on the server side and also on the client side. And the plugins are similar as well, right? So plugins, just to clarify for anyone who doesn't know Nuxt very well, in Vue, you have your main JS is pretty common or whatever. You know, you have a bootstrapping module that kicks you off and starts your Vue process, you know, your Vue instance. But Nuxt doesn't work that way. Again, it's one of these things that, you know, this is back to convention over configuration. You know, Nuxt has these pages. It generates the routing. Well, Nuxt also generates the bootstrapping of its application, right? So you don't actually have an easy way to add something in when you're starting off the process, okay? And again, all this abstraction is for a purpose, you know, because it does all the server side, client side divide for you. It handles everything for you. And if you don't know what you're doing, it just does it for you. So plugins are the nice way inside Nuxt that you can sort of bootstrap something into the app. And you can choose with plugins if they run both on the server side and the client side or just on one of them. So yeah, I mean, that was one of my main areas of focus. I was looking at this and saying, well, you know, we hit the page for the first time. Maybe the plugins gives us something that we can use to lock or to pause or do something to handle this client side sort of barrier you want to put on this page. Okay. So again, I'm back to this use case. I'm trying to hit an authenticated page. I can only verify it really on the client side. I don't want to always block it. I don't want to always run a client side. You know, I want to be able to render a server side if I know I have everything I need. So, I mean, I looked at plugins. One of the things that I called out in the article is that you can actually run plugins asynchronously, right? So that it doesn't actually block. And I did a bit of testing on the client side to see how an asynchronous plugin behaved. And yeah, I could do an asynchronous plugin. I mean, the reason why I wanted to be asynchronous is I could go off and make a call to another service and sort of check this authentication situation. But the whole time that it's running, right, sure, you've essentially paused the client side bootstrap, right, of your application. The server side render is still sitting there staring you in the face. So again, it goes back to that, you know, understand that life cycle, right? So on the server, it runs, produces the HTML output, and then it's on your browser looking you in the face while your client side application is starting up, right? So I suppose after investigating plugins, after investigating middleware, after looking at all the different options that Nuxt provides, I kind of took a step back and I came up with this concept of sort of what I call deferring the server-side render, right? Because it's not that I always wanted to be client-side, I always wanted to be server-side. Like I said, it's not as black and white as all that. So when I come across this situation where I've hit this middleware, I'm on the server side, I don't know if I should be letting this user through or not, I sort of flag this state that the request is deferred, okay? And what happens is the remainder of the server-side render happens, but it doesn't render the full page. all it does is render a spinner, right? Which seems like a bit of a waste, but it's equivalent to doing a client-only render. You know, if you think about before server-side rendering was an option, if you boot up a client-side application, the first thing you're looking at is a spinner while everything's loading. So in the case that someone clicks a link in an email or something to an authenticated page or in their bookmarks or whatever, they're going to see this spinner while they're waiting. Now, if it's an authenticated page, this is a user who uses the site regularly. We're not going to lose somebody who doesn't know our application. But if they go to a standard landing page that's public, you know, they're going to get it straight away. And if it just so happens that their session is still valid, a long life JWT or something like that, they can go straight in and they get that server-side render straight off the bat, which increases the speed, you know. The behavior when they're browsing around the app. And like I said, in the e-commerce site, it's common that people are opening up a lot of windows. So, you know, each of those windows is a new session, really. That makes sense?
Yes. Still trying to wrap this all around my head around it all. But yeah, logically, it makes sense. I'd have to see it, like actually work with it a little bit to understand it more completely. But yeah, I get the idea about how you can stop stuff, wait, make sure, see this is what you really want to do, and then go from there.
So I suppose, I mean, when I started off coming with the solution, there's a lot of complex moving parts here. So my goal was to sort of say, hey, I want to implement a piece of infrastructure. And then separate from that, I want to decide when I need to use it. You know, for anyone else come along to maintain or work with this code, it's nice to have a sort of common infrastructure tool, you know, similar to middleware and plugins and modules and all that you find in Nuxt, you know, design the tool and then use it somewhere. So I came up with this concept of pending jobs. Okay, so in actual fact, at any point in the server-side render process, you know, and again, that life cycle has a lot of pieces to it. At any point that we need to run this defer as such, we basically just dispatch Vuex action to store up a job that's going to have to be run on the client side, right? So what actually happens is we send out that dispatch. From then on out, the server-side render knows it's going to be rendering a spinner. It's not going to do a full-on render. It's not going to build out this page that we don't know if we're going to need yet. And when it gets over to the client side, the hydration process, you know, it pulls in that Vuex store state, which right now is a list of actions to be executed, right? So it's like it's an array of strings. It's nice JSON serializable content. It gets pushed into the store. You know, the store has that, I forget what it's called, the method there to sort of rehydrate the store, to replace the state, actually replace state is what it's called. So it pushes that all into the store and then it bootstraps on the client side. And when it goes to check this reactive data in the store, it says, oh, there's some pending jobs. The client side application hydrates and then it runs those jobs. Once it's mounted, it runs those jobs. The loader is still showing there. It does whatever it needs to do, and then it makes a call of what to do next. So it's that level of control in the life cycle as we're doing a render from the server to the client side. I suppose that's the crux of the article.
Hey folks, it's Charles Maxwood, and I just wanted to jump in here and let you know about something that I'm doing. It's free. It's out there just to help you get answers to your questions about the things that you're running into with your career. So if you have questions about how to get further ahead in your career, how to start a podcast, how to get a better job, how to get a raise, how to deal with a situation at work with your boss, or just maybe you're stuck and you don't know where to go next. You know, how do I get from junior to senior, senior to whatever's next? How do I become a speaker? How do I get to the next level? That's what I'm out here to do. So every Wednesday at 12 o'clock Mountain Time, I'm going to be doing a call, and it's going to be free, totally free. Go to devchat.tv/levelup, and you can register for the call. It's using Zoom's webinar software, so it's pretty straightforward. And what we're going to be doing is I'll do 10 minutes, and I'll just show you how I do some form of how I level up. And then we'll just answer questions. And it's not going to be a question and answer like, hey, what's your favorite flavor of ice cream? And then I say Rocky Road or whatever, right? Instead, what we're looking for is more along the lines of, yeah, I have this situation. How do I handle it? I'm trying to figure this thing out. How do I figure it out? I'm trying to stay current. How do I stay current? And if you have any of those kinds of questions, I'll bring you on the call. We'll ask some deeper questions. We'll make sure we get you a solid answer. And I'm really looking forward to helping some people out. There will be no sales, no selling, no nothing on these calls. It is literally just 10 minutes of training and then Q&A. So you can go check it out at devchat.tv/level up.
I really like this solution for this problem that you're basically just creating a job queue and deferring things until you're on the client side. I think that makes a lot of sense for the problem that you were coming to. I'm looking at this, and obviously the solution you came to is using Vuex. Would you, if you wanted to build this out as we were just talking about Nuxt modules and Nuxt plugins, would you want to build this out as a more generic job queue plugin for Nuxt? Is that something that would make sense to you, or does it really need to live in the Vuex layer like you have it here?
Yeah, I'm interested to know why you're asking, Lindsay. You know, it's I have a bit of a love-hate relationship with Vuex, and I find a lot of people are very much on one side or the other with it. Are you one of those people that would prefer a different solution, you know, Pina or one of these, or even something simpler again?
It's not so much that. It's I look at this, and this is really cool, but to implement this in a Nuxt application, it requires Vuex. And you'd have to basically either copy-paste this or import it as a Vuex module somehow into your Vuex store. But either way, you're reliant on Vuex. And I'm just trying to think, is there a way with this logic, can this actually work in a plugin of some sort? Like kind of going back in your thought process, but still ending up with the same implementation at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There's no reason it wouldn't work that way. I suppose my thought process for the Vuex module is that my experience is most devs know Vuex well. So you put something in a Vuex module and they can normally follow it. And again, this is there's a lot of new concepts here. So there's a lot of stuff to take in. If you can remove that learning curve, I think Vuex modules are easy to read. But there's nothing from a technical perspective, there's nothing to stop us using the Nuxt state. Nuxt provides that we can interact with on the server side. You know, there'd be nothing stopping us just adding something to the Nuxt state on the server side that the client side picks up on and uses in whatever way it wants. So yeah, to answer your question, there's no reason it couldn't be something completely separate. And as you say, it would make it easy to wrap it up maybe in a reusable way. You know, you could open source it and have it as an easy installable plugin, an easy installable module.
Yeah. Well, anyone listening, if they want to try and build a job queue plugin for Nuxt, now's your opportunity.
Well, I mean,
no, this is really cool.
For me, the article is about, you know, is about the path to find the solution. I suppose the solution is one thing by itself, right? But I said, I love diving through the layers, thinking about the flows and the scenarios, you know. So it is, and I love isomorphic code. The truth is, you know, it's really cool.
Yeah, that's actually one of the things I love the most about these server-side frameworks like Nuxt, or if you're in React, Next.js, where your JavaScript is just running. It doesn't really matter where you are, whether it's on the server, whether it's on the client. Everything just works, ideally. And to really get that benefit, you do have to do this kind of deep dive and really understand what's going on and what you can and cannot do and when things run and all of that.
Yeah, definitely. I think Nuxt is, like I said before, it's quite progressive and sort of progressive disclosure. You know what I mean? You get in, you play with it the first time, you don't really need to know how it all works, but gradually as time goes on, you're going to hit something at some point and say, why did you do it like that? You know, and what can I do to get around this? And you're going to go digging in the weeds, you know, and I think it does happen quite organically, quite naturally. You know what I mean? And I guess the docs are geared up for that sort of nice, even learning curve. They don't overload you up front. You know, I think Vue was good as that as well. A lot of times I've come across stuff and I said, that's not in the documentation. I think they did it intentionally. They didn't want to overload people all at once with every concept, you know? So that progressive disclosure, I think both Vue and Nuxt do that very well.
Yeah, I feel like that's something a part of the ethos of the Vue community is not overloading people with technical knowledge until they're ready for it.
Yeah, and here I come along with this article, huh?
No, and when people read this article, they're ready for it. That's the idea.
Yes, you just blew that all to smithereens, Mike. Just blew it all.
Well, cool. Thank you so much for going through all of this. Is there anything specific, like when you're writing an article like this and you're wanting to do a deep dive on a particular topic, even before you get to the article, what is your thought process on the next step? Like, how do you find that next thing to look at? In this case, with Nuxt, it was obviously we're looking back with 2020 vision, but it was more obvious the different options you could look at because there is middleware, there is plugins, there is Vuex, there's, you know, there's all of these tools that Nuxt provides. But when you're needing to do a deep dive like this, whether it be Nuxt or any other tool, how do you think about the problem to reach that next step that you want to investigate, that one layer deeper?
I'm always reading through the code. I have Vue and Nuxt code at hand at any moment. And this, you know, you asked me before about the move from Java to JavaScript. That's one of the cool things about JavaScript. You just go digging in the code anytime you want. And you know, you have all those Java compiled libraries. You never get a look at any code. So you know, it's really, really amazing to be able to sort of just dive in at any point and say, how is this going to behave in this scenario? You know, so I'm always diving in the code. Now, in fairness, in Nuxt's situation, it gives you that sort of menu of options as you go through the docs. You know what I mean? You can immediately scan through and sort of say, hey, what does that do? And maybe this will help. There's definitely a trail you can follow. But absolutely, I'm always digging in the code. And I'd say to anybody who wants to get into the weeds with Nuxt, have a look at it. The code's beautiful, by the way. And it's clear, it's easy to go through. So you can really get some extra perspective doing that.
Have there been any surprises when you've been looking either at Nuxt or Vue or any of these tools that you use when you do a deep dive? Has there been any surprise that you've been very happy to discover?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I've done a lot of work in the past with reactivity in Vue, and I've definitely gone in the weeds on that. I wrote an article a while back about sort of tracing the reactivity as something happens, you know. And it's funny, Vue 3 has come along and killed all my articles, because anything that I wanted to solve for Vue 2 has been solved in Vue 3 just out of the box, you know. But I did an article about tracing reactivity in Vue 2 and sort of finding out what's causing something and why you have this sort of big reactivity chain that's occurring. And I actually wrote a little library as well that would allow you to sort of debug and find out what triggers this change that you didn't know where it was coming from. And the guys, I put sort of dev tool traceability in Vue 3. But that was me digging through the weeds again, you know, and I suppose looking through the Vue code. There's been a few times now where I've done something kind of on the line, you know, where I say, is that a private or a public interface? At one point, I found that the vNode for a component is actually a public property, but undocumented. And I thought, it's definitely public, you know, it doesn't start with an underscore or anything like that. But I suppose sometimes you get tempted, when you're digging through the code, you get tempted a lot of the time to sort of try to do something that maybe doesn't use a very obvious interface. And maybe two versions down, it's going to break on you, you know, if you upgrade. But yeah, that's, I suppose, the only danger. But yeah, I've definitely found some really nice stuff digging through the code.
It's actually interesting you mentioned vNode, because I think that's one of the pieces that's blocking tools like Vuetify from upgrading to Vue 3, is that they're very reliant on that vNode interface and that it changed between Vue 2 and Vue 3.
Interesting, right? I don't feel so bad now.
So one thing I'll play a little devil's advocate or pushback on is, at the very beginning of the podcast, you were talking about your organization's reasons for using Nuxt, and you said, because obviously as an e-commerce, as being focused on e-commerce, SEO is crucially important. And so you use Nuxt. Believe it or not, there are other ways to do SEO other than Nuxt. And I mean, don't mean to sound sarcastic, but I know that was my assumption for Nuxt, you know, for instance, if I wanted to do some blogs or some other sites. And I'll, as an example, and this is something discussed in an episode 137, one that I did with my boss here at GovTribe, is we use Straight View with Laravel and Mongo on the back end, but we use a Node.js library called Rendertron that we sit on our servers, and that handles all the indexing by the bots. And we get some killer SEO. There's various ways that you can see how good our SEO is, whether it's by the words that other companies buy or stuff like that. And so I personally like that setup, just because with Straight View as compared to Nuxt, you don't deal with a lot of the complexities that you do have here. Although it's fair to say some of the complexities are just pushed to other areas and you have to deal with them other ways. But from a Vue standpoint, it's really nice to be able to just deal with Vue and not Nuxt. But so all of that's to say that yes, Nuxt is, play a little devil's advocate and say, yes, Nuxt is a great tool for when you want to have good SEO because of the server-side rendering capabilities, but it's certainly not the only tool out there for handling that particular problem.
Yeah, Steve, I absolutely agree. I mean, there's lots of cool solutions out there, and it depends on your needs.
Sure.
I mean, one thing about using Nuxt in universal mode is it's not as, I suppose, it's not as trendy as it used to be. You know, it's obviously serverless sort of function oriented sort of work is where people are going now. You know what I mean? So having that process constantly running isn't as nice as it used to be. But that being said, I mean, in our case, sort of pre-render content wasn't really much of a runner for us. And I mean, if you could do that, I mean, there's a lot of options around just handling the SEO piece, just returning the metadata and still having a client-side application, sort of single-page application start up on the client side. I'm not too sure about all the search engines, about how they would work with not having actual server-side rendered HTML. Do you know what I mean with the solution? Basically, you basically bootstrap the app on the URL you're looking for, and the only thing that comes back is essentially the head with the metadata.
Correct.
And the application still runs a client-side initial, you know, bootstrapping as a normal Vue application would do, right? Mm-hmm. And I know Google's going to read that just fine, but I don't have the full stats on other search engines and how good it's going to fare across the board. But even aside from that, there's the benefit of obviously of a server-side render is that speed too, you know. So there is lots of options. You're absolutely right. There's lots of things to weigh up. You got to see your own needs. But I am really happy with using Nux in universal mode.
Oh yeah, sure. I don't mean to knock it. I just always like to throw out the options for that because I think I don't know how many people still do this, but I know the assumption used to be, oh, if you're using Vue and you want server-side rendering, you got to use Nux. Well, it helps. And it's one tool, but not the only one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think tools like Vite are also helping get that message across that Nux is not the only solution for server-side rendering because Vite includes SSR. And I think with Vue 3, it's even easier to do SSR in general. But tools like Nux are now adopting Vite to do the server-side rendering portion, it seems like. I remember seeing a tweet today from Anthony Fu talking about how he's now joined the Nux team, first off. But also he's working very much on the migration of Nux 2 and 3 to Vite. So I think that the tie that the Vue community has to Nux as the server-side rendering solution is fading away, and we're able to look at Nux in terms of what it actually provides and the benefits that it provides. And I think that's healthy. We're not relying on it for just the one thing and then ignoring all of its other benefits. We're actually looking at it for the benefits it does provide, like the middleware and the plugin ecosystem and things like that.
Yeah, I know for some people, one of the other benefits is the routing, and that it's a heck of a lot easier to handle your page routing by just defining your folders and your components instead of having to go set up your JavaScript objects and your Vue router configs. Yep. I work on a business application used for project tracking for a client, and that was a large part of his reason for using Nux was because of when he was fairly new into Vue at the time, it handled all his page routing for him. And he didn't have to mess with that, so that was a large part of the reason for using it.
Yeah, definitely. No, it's a big ecosystem too. You know, you want to get something to plug in. There's the Nux plugin. There's NuxAuth, which is a fantastic library. And there's all, you know, you basically just pick things off the shelf and build an app with a couple of commands. You know, I mean, you could argue that Vue has gone that way as well. In some ways, Nux and like the Vue CLI have sort of gone in separate paths, but Nux really excels at the convention over configuration, and I just want it to work, you know, that kind of attitude.
Right. Yep, for sure.
Speaking of Nux plugins and modules, I'm going to shamelessly plug my own for the GitHub API. It's a module that lets you fetch data from the GitHub API and inject it into your Vue instance. Because yeah, writing modules in Nux is great, and there's a whole ecosystem of them. There's an entire page where you can just search up different things. And if you do write your own module, it's pretty straightforward to get it added in. Huge community there. When I used Nux in production at a previous company, we didn't even care about the SSR. Like, that was a nice benefit, but we didn't care. What was really useful was having a node server attached to the Vue instance, so we didn't have to manually configure that ourselves. It was for an admin interface that would talk to existing APIs. So Nux itself, just providing that server, was all the benefit we really needed from Nux. Everything else was gravy on top.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. One of the things I've been looking at recently, I mean, I suppose coming back to that server-side render, you know, and the benefit of the universal setup is the caching, right? So, you know, one of the parts of the server-side render, you know, we use a CMS in our solution, right? And it's great to be able to get that content. In some ways, the universal app, it kind of takes you away from the static site generation. You don't want to go all the way over to static site generation, but, you know, you don't want to have to re-render a lot of stuff all the time. So we've been doing a lot of work with server-side rendering cache, and that there is actually a Nux plugin for caching. And I don't know why it doesn't have 10,000 stars. GitHub. It's a really cool tool. If you search for it, it's just in Nux SSR cache. It's simple, And again, it opens up the door for a whole pile of new flows and a whole new way to architect your solution. One of the things we do a lot is that on certain pages and certain views, we will display something generically because we know we want to put into a cache. So we'll, and even one thing we've been doing recently is we actually know in the flow when we're caching a page. So we make sure not to put any user details specifically in it. And when it goes back to the client side, those components will be client side only. If you know, if, say your name on a header or something like that, where your username or something, your profile menu, whatever, all that kind of stuff. And if we know we're not caching the content, we'll put it into the server side render. But if this page is a page to be cached, we don't want to do any server side work on it and just send it back. We can do that. So again, it's about getting that granularity. I said before, this solution is kind of taking more control of the life cycle. You know, it's not black and white, it's not server side, client side, it's somewhere in the middle. And you know, with that sort of caching solution, it's not a case of, hey, it's just statically generated or it's just dynamic. You get that middle ground.
Okay, my details tenant just went up. Antenna just went up. So I gotta get some more details from you. So you said you're using a CMS as your data store for your next application. Did I understand that correctly?
Yeah, well, we have, there's certain areas of the site that have a lot of sort of business-driven content, standard sort of CMS content, marketing material and stuff like that.
Sure.
Pages that, you know, other people in the organization need to be able to control, and they control through CMS.
So what, out of curiosity, what CMS do you use?
I wouldn't want to go plug in any CMS. We use a CMS called Agility.
Okay. All right. So
they're very supportive, just to say. You know, it's a good solution. And I know they've done a lot of stuff with Nuxt. They've done a few articles and things like that. So
how is the data? I'm trying to understand where the caching layer works in. Well, the term caching makes me twitch based on past experiences I've had, especially cache invalidation. So you have this Agility CMS that sits back there, and your users are able to use that to enter all their marketing data and so on, you know, like any good CMS, I assume. So how is that data passed or accessed in Nuxt from the CMS? Is it like a standard REST API or using RPCs or and where does that access happen in Nuxt?
Yeah, we've done this in a slightly different way than might be traditional, right? So most of the time you'd be using a CMS either in your static site generation. I mean, you know, you get that static output, or you'd be sort of calling it at runtime from your components, like you say, with an API, you know, REST API, whatever it is. What we do is we actually rebuild. When we get a new publish from the CMS, we rebuild, and it's at that time that we pull down our CMS data and we keep it within the application.
But you're making that call from the server side in your next application, right?
Yeah. It's actually kind of build time. It's sort of node build processed. But regardless, that JSON content becomes bundles through Webpack that the client side, you know, if you're navigating around the client side, you know, it's gonna call those bundles to pull back that data in a single page application. But if I was to hit that page as my first page in the session, it would normally trigger a server-side render, right? So getting back to that Nuxt scenario in a universal mode, first page you hit kicks off a session and does the server-side render. The rest of the time you're doing your standard client-side single page application. Okay, so these are all in bundles. You can pull them back as you need. I mean, the reason we do this is to remove a runtime dependency on a third-party service. There's always a benefit to that. You're never going to say, "Oh, my site's down because somebody else is down." So we do that. And when we do the server-side render, I mean, there's not a lot of effort to render it anyway, but as it is essentially a static page, why not? So what we do is we use this server-side render caching to, and in Nuxt, you just, under the hood of this caching module, basically it just runs this render route. You know, request comes in, creates this cache key. Do I have the cache? Send it back without having to do anything in Nuxt at all. Or if I don't have the cache key, I have to run the root. So you do the render root, and then you store it in the cache.
So if you're using render root, does that mean you're doing something like an incremental render as compared to a full-on render of having to redo all of your content?
You could do, right? We don't do it that way. But yeah, I mean, that's another alternative. You can sort of cache individual components if that was a benefit to you, you know?
So you're doing a full rebuild?
Yeah. In our case, I mean, it's pretty static. Mm-hmm. In these particular pages. And like I said, because I mean, one of the things that we've added on to this Nuxt module is the ability inside Nooks to know, hey, this is going to be cached. And if it is going to be cached, we make a decision about what we're going to put into that cache. You know, we're not going to serialize all the user data and stick it into the store. So, because obviously the next time someone comes along, you know, they're going to see, hey, I'm Bob, but this is, you know, Carl's content. And
that's a problem. I'm kidding.
You know, and you got mobile desktop as well, right? So we do a lot of, I wish you, in a perfect world, obviously you wouldn't be re-rendering a lot of content for a mobile desktop, but you do make a call on what you want users to see. So we want to cache it with the right format. So if anything, I'd say that this kind of caching stuff should be part of Nuxt. That would be my opinion on it, you know? I think if it was there, again, one of these progressive disclosure, when you get to know it really well, you see this, another tool under the hood that you can get access to.
Right.
Maybe it'll be there as, if not something built in, then something that's available when we get to Nuxt 3.
Yeah, there's a lot of exciting stuff on in the pipeline.
Yeah. Well, Mike, thank you so much. Is there anything else that you feel we need to cover before we wrap up?
No, I think that's covered the gist of it, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, this has been a content-filled episode. Thank you so much for being here.
Glad to be here. It's been great.
Yeah.
Hey, folks, it's Charles Max Wood, and I just wanted to jump on real quick and let you know that I am putting together a podcasting course. I get asked all the time. I've been coaching people for the last 6 months. How do you start a podcast? How do you put it together? What do I need in order to get it going, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I've put together the curriculum, and I did it through coaching a whole bunch of people, and now I want to share it with you. You can go check out the course. It's actually going to be a masterclass. It's going to be a 4-week masterclass where I actually walk you through the entire process of launching a terrific sounding podcast and putting together content that people want to listen to. And you can find it at podcastbootcamp.io.
At this point, we will move on to picks. Picks are the part of the show where we share things we like with the community. They don't necessarily have to be programming related. Today, let's start with Steve. Do you have a pick for us today, Steve?
Oh, I always have picks.
Good.
So I'll start with my usual dad jokes. So, you know, there's always the jokes about why did the chicken cross the road? So do you know why the toilet paper rolled down the hill? To get to the bottom. Get it? Yes, thank you. Thank you. So the other day I went to Home Depot, you know, pick your usual hardware store, because in my backyard, a lot of times we'll get wasp nests, like up under the eaves of my roof or sometimes under the railing of my deck. And so I needed to get something to take care of them. And so I found something that looked good. And I went to one of the associates there, and I wanted to make sure I had the right thing. And I said, is this good for wasps? And she said, no, it actually kills them. But I'm bum. So Mike's over there holding his head going, why am I here? And then lastly, I'll share a Babylon Bee post that actually provided me with a new joke. And I'm very happy about that. Babylon Bee is a satire site. They're really funny. And there's this post about how supposedly a failed stand-up comedian became a pastor because he has a captive audience to tell all those bad jokes. And so there's a whole genre of Bible jokes along the lines of, you know, did you know that there was baseball in the Bible? Because it starts out in the big inning. You know, they had Hondas in the Bible because in the book of Acts, it says that all of the people were in one accord. And so I learned a new one today that if you know the story about Abraham and Isaac and how Abraham was going to sacrifice Isaac, the joke goes that, did you know that they actually went to build a computer together because God provided the ram. Because at the end of the story, there's a ram in the bush that they used for the sacrifice instead. So anyway, those are my jokes and pick for the week.
Only there had been a motherboard.
Exactly.
Thank you very much, Steve. Mike, do you have a pick for us today?
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the things that I always love talking about people is AST, Abstract Syntax Tree, for when you're working with code. I read some code sometimes, especially in the migration sort of area, where I'm sort of programmatically modifying code. It's very meta. But one of the tools that I just find absolutely necessary, and anyone could look at it and you can find it cool from the start, is AST Explorer. And if you go into it and you just paste some code in on the left-hand side, it'll show you the syntax tree for it on the right. And this is the basis behind ESLint. I know we all love ESLint, and we love to be able to fix things automatically. Well, this is how it does it. You know, it takes code, converts it into this abstract syntax tree, and works on it programmatically. So yeah, I'm at some point I'm going to write an article about this because I love this stuff.
Wow, that has a lot of options to look at code. It's got Reason, it's got Scala, SQL, I'm just scrolling through, YAML, HTML, JSON, Lua, OCaml, PHP. Wow, this is really cool. Everyone should take a look at that. Thank you, Mike. So I have three picks today. So first, we were talking about Nuxt a lot. And if you are interested in writing your own module for Nuxt, the Nuxt community GitHub account has a template that you can follow, module template, that will guide you through creating a Nuxt module and submitting it to NPM. It comes built in with things like ESLint and Jest, code coverage tests, GitHub Actions, and it guides you through the whole process. Definitely recommend it if that's what you're interested in doing or looking at. Pick number two is Awesome Vite, which we were talking a bit about Vite today. It is a list of plugins and templates and handlers and a whole bunch of stuff all around Vite. And one of the nice things about Vite, if you haven't looked at it yet, is that it is not framework specific. It is a separate tool from Vue. So if you want to use it with React, if you want to use it with Svelte, if you want to use it with Elm, I recently submitted an Elm template for Vite. So lots of cool resources there if you want to get into Vite and its plugin ecosystem. Definitely recommend checking that out. Pick number three, this may be a stretch. I think I'm getting the date of this episode's release correct. Nuxt Nation is happening on September 15th. I believe this episode comes out on the 14th. If not, from the future, I'm sorry. But Nuxt Nation is going to be the largest Nuxt conference, according to the website, where they are expected to be talking about Nuxt 3 and all of the new goodies that are coming. So if you are interested in all things Nuxt and the future of the Nuxt framework, definitely check that out. If this episode does come out on the 14th, like I'm hoping, you should be able to go to the website and claim a free ticket. It is an online conference. If not, I would imagine all of the announcements from the conference have made their way to various blogs and YouTube. So definitely recommend checking those out as well. Great. We are at the end of the show now. So Mike, how can people reach out to you if they want to continue this conversation?
On LinkedIn or GitHub, send me an issue for one of my repos and I'll be back to you pretty quick. But yeah, definitely hit me up on LinkedIn. Like I said, I work for a company called Hip. We're an e-commerce company. We work around collectibles. So it's a really growing area. It's a growing company. It's a bootstrap startup. So it's a really cool place to work. Let me know. And we're always looking for people, good people, you know?
Sounds like a hip place to work.
I hear that all the time.
I knew it. Dang it. Thought I'd give it a shot though.
Steve, you got to be more hip.
I know.
Excellent. Thank you, Mike. And thank you again for coming on the show.
Great to be here.
Hope you all enjoyed this episode as well. If you'd like to find more from us, you can find us at viewsonview.com or at devchat.tv. You can also find us on Twitter at viewsonview. You can find myself on Twitter at Lindsay K. Wardell. And you can find Steve on Twitter at Wonder95. Hope you enjoyed this episode. We'll see you again next week.
Adios.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.